The most undervalued skill in our world is bravery. And I am very brave.
Mr. Super Pride.
The best agent that has ever lived.
Godfather of real estate.
Mr. Bond.
I'm Daniel Daggers, aka Mr. Super Pride.
I've been labeled as arrogant most of my life. What we have done as a business is ginormous. We've just challenged the two most significant real estate businesses on the planet. Do you see many people like me at the top end of the market?
No.
I would say that we're very different people.
Yes.
I'm a normal guy. When you come from the background that I have, even the worst parts of my upbringing, you know, being mugged at knife point at 8 years old, it's made me. When I see opportunity, I'm going to go for it. Nothing's going to stand in my way. Nothing.
Getting money.
One for the money.
$350 Swiss.
Zurich, 23.
Two for the show.
2 and 8 sold.
Get it, get ready, and board.
Go!
Welcome to Mavericks.
Firstly, Daniel, thank you very much for coming on. I first came across your name when I was preparing for a previous podcast with Gary Hersham.
Never.
And he was doing a podcast with someone else, and he was asked if there was one person that he could have on his team that he'd never, you know, never been able to get on his team, who would that be? And I want to read back a quote to you. He said, "A young man by the name of Danny Daggers, who's very bright, very astute, very full of himself, a bit arrogant, but knows the market very, very well." Now, I was really intrigued. And the first question I want to ask you is that a fair description of you?
It depends on who you are. I've been labeled as arrogant most of my life. I don't think I'm arrogant, but I suppose other people are going to have a different perception of me.
Yeah.
All the other stuff I'd like to think is accurate.
Yeah. Well, I think he's a pretty good judge of character. So to understand the man you are today, I want to go back 40 odd years. To just round the corner from here in Maida Vale.
Yeah.
Your father Derek, your mother Noga. What was your childhood like?
Firstly, thank you for doing your research. My childhood was amazing. I look back at it with so much joy and gratitude because my parents just ploughed me full of stuff that I really needed for my life, and I didn't know it at the time. So I grew up in local authority housing, and for a Jewish family, that's very rare. I went to a private school because there was some form of advantage that we had to get into this private school because it was new. And I went to a local boys club. It was called a boys club at the time. It was a youth center, whatever it may be. And I mingled with different kinds of people. At school, most of the families were wealthy. And so I saw a little bit of what wealth looked like. We walked to school. Other kids turned up in convertible Mercedes with their mum looking very glamorous, which was great. And then in the evenings, I'd go to the youth center, and it would be every kind of kid you could imagine, every color, race, ethnicity. And I had to figure out how to suss that all out. But my parents were amazing. My dad spent a huge amount of time with me playing football in the park or on the green, really bonded that way. And my mom was very loving, but quite strict and tough with me.
Did you have a good relationship with your parents?
I still have a good relationship with my parents, but it just depends if I'm doing things that they like me to do or not. My mum wanted me to be a doctor. It turned out being a real estate agent. So, I've got a great relationship with my parents.
How do you think your parents would have described you as a kid? Would they have said high achieving? Would they have said
no? Because there was no signals of me being a high achiever when I was a kid.
Yeah,
school. I failed at school because I just don't learn the same way. My dad called me Banana Boy because I had so much energy. I would be bouncing off the walls. As an only child,
It's
difficult. That's really difficult. You have to learn to entertain yourself. And then when you're playing with people who aren't your family. You know, always other kids. And there's the argument to say, well, usually only children, they're very selfish. It's actually, I wasn't selfish with any of the stuff that my parents gave me. Toys, football, whatever it may be. I was just, I'm probably still quite demanding when it comes to attention.
Yeah, yeah.
When I want to speak to you, I want to speak to you.
Yes, yeah. You were into football, weren't you?
Still into football.
Yeah.
Yeah, I loved football. I loved the whole mechanics and psychology around it, even though I didn't know that
that that was the case when I was playing. I just enjoyed myself. I was so free. And it's when I started to realize that I thought a bit differently to other kids.
Yeah. Do you think it's fair to say that early on, as a kid, you thought that football was going to be your career?
I wanted it to be.
Yes. Yeah.
My parents knew it wasn't going to be.
Yes.
And they prepared me for it.
As in weren't good enough for?
They knew that I wasn't going to be good enough.
Yes. Yeah.
I just didn't have the ride or die attitude.
Yeah.
Like smash into that guy. Growing up as a kid in the UK in the late 80s, early 90s, like, and you want to be a footballer, you needed to be 6'2", yeah, run faster and further than everyone else, and you had to smash into people because that's what they really valued. They were so behind the times.
Yes, yeah.
If you look at it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because now size doesn't really matter so much. It's more about speed of thought, creativity, technique, all the other stuff that we didn't really value.
Yes, yeah, yeah. So you're kind of growing up through your teenage years, you kind of get to 17 and you have that decision of what to do with your life, how you want your life to play out.
Yeah.
You get your first job with Vickers and Company.
Yes, right.
Now, was this a case of getting any job you could, or was it a case of I specifically wanted to go into real estate?
No. I didn't know what I wanted to do. And school told me that I wouldn't be successful at anything. So I had no levels of expectations. In fact, before joining Vickers, I did a 2-week work experience because I studied business studies. And that was the moment that the sort of light got turned on for me. And I really started to understand things that were practical for everyday life. But I didn't have any level of expectations. Zero. I knew nothing. I literally knew nothing. And I was keen on my football. And I was running around trying to meet girls, you know, in my late teens. That's how it works. But I didn't expect anything for myself. And no one expected anything from me.
Did you get the bug for real estate very early on? Were you?
No.
Not really? Just a job?
No. People have got the wrong interpretation of what real estate actually is. It's not a real estate business. You know, it's not about bricks and mortar. It has nothing to do with that. It has everything to do with people. Okay, we are in the people business. We are front and facing with people, and we find solutions for people. And if you're good at that, then you will build your business. If you focus on real estate, you should be an architect or an interior designer or a surveyor, which I studied and hated and left after a couple of months. I didn't have any levels of expectations. The job that I went for prior to Vickers was to be a sales assistant at JD Sports, and they didn't even come back to me. And I fell into the role because I broke my collarbone playing football with some friends. And the Vickers & Co., I did a 2-week work experience. One of the agents left. And they bumped into my dad on the street, you know, as random as it gets, and says, you know, what's Daniel doing now? And he said, well, he's got his arm in his sling, he's broken his collarbone, and he wants to get a job. I was just desperate to be independent, financially independent. So I could say to my mom and dad, I know what I'm doing, this is what I want to do, and this is how I want to go about doing it, kind of thing. I wanted to get a car, you know, a little Vauxhall Corsa. I wanted to put a subwoofer in the back so I could play my garage anthem. That's what I wanted as a kid. I knew nothing about watches, planes, billionaires, millionaires, whatever. I knew nothing about it.
Yeah.
Zero.
It's interesting that you say that real estate is about people. It's not about property. And it teased me up quite nicely because the first house you sold at Vickers was for, I think, £117,000.
Yeah.
And what fascinates me most about that is not the location. It's not the square footage. It's not the price. But it's the fact that you stayed in touch with the buyer for the next 2 decades.
Yeah.
Talk to me about that.
I stayed in touch with the buyer, but the buyer stayed in touch with me as well. Right. Like relationships work both ways. If it works any one way, then it's not a relationship. Someone's using somebody. Look, I had a job that gave me a form of financial freedom, and there was nothing to take my attention to go anywhere else. That's all I was there to do. I was there to work. And there was nothing that was taking me any other. There wasn't, it's not as if, you know, BlackRock was saying, hey, please come and work with us, or Goldman Sachs, or some technology business. Like, I knew nothing. And so all I had was to stay in touch with people. That's all I had to do, is just to speak to people. And often speak to people when they least expect me to speak to people, because that's where people carry more value. People don't realize this is the art of communication is the most important thing in our lives, particularly now during this technology revolution and democratization of information, is that this is all about people. And so George and I stayed in touch for decades, and we did some huge deals together, huge. And he passed away not long ago, which is very sad. But yeah, I mean, everything is about how to stay in touch with people.
Did you have any mentors at Vickers?
No.
Anyone that taught you the ropes?
When you work, people who listen to this, you know, when you work in a business, especially then, there was no onboarding process and training and all that sort of stuff. It was like, there's the seat, there's the phone. I remember my first morning, there's the seat, there's the phone, there's the car box. All the details of the properties are in that folder over there. Go and sell real estate. I'd never sold anything in my life. In fact, I wrote a post for, I think it was on my Instagram channel, to say the first thing that I ever sold was myself. I can help you.
Mm.
That's the first thing I ever sold, not real estate. Yeah.
Were there many young people working for Vickers? Or was...
No, there was about 8 people in the office. I was the youngest by a decade.
And what time. Kind of
I loved them, everybody.
What kind of property?
Just residential property,
small
apartments, yeah. Ranging between. At the time, it was the smallest deal that I ever did was £85,000. I made, I think, £175 out of that deal. And it went up to about £1 million, and then I moved to a bigger firm.
Yes.
But all I did was meet people and talk about real estate.
So let's talk about that. So you just said you moved to a bigger firm there. That firm was Knight Frank.
Mm.
But you were at Vickers for 10 years, which actually,
it's very rare.
It is unusual.
Yeah.
It is unusual. And why do you think you spent so long at Vickers? Was it, were you totally satisfied? I mean, you sound there, you wanted to get on with things. You wanted to, you know, push ahead with life. Why were you at Vickers for 10 years, do you think?
Because I was none the wiser.
Right.
So I stayed there because they were practically my family. My family moved abroad, and then the people in my business became the people I spent most of my time with. Yeah. And I felt that I was learning and I was making money, although not a lot. My salary was like £8,000 a year or whatever it was. And I was just, this is why I think the world is very complicated for young people, is that they can see so much else going on. And for me, I saw my friends leave university who were considered to be much smarter than I was. And then leave uni, golden handshake into Goldman's or some accounting firm or insurance and make a lot more money than me. And that's all I knew.
Mm.
That's all I knew. Mm. I didn't know anything else. I didn't know about the holidays in Tuscany and the holidays in Ibiza and the members clubs here. I knew nothing. And then gradually, as you tend to spend time in other places, you start to realize that there's more opportunity. And it's your job, it's your own personal job to go and find more opportunity for yourself.
Mm.
And that's why I moved.
So now, fast forward with 2007, you joined Knight Frank. This is just before the financial crisis. So
yeah, November.
I've got two questions here. So firstly, what was it like moving to an absolute behemoth of a company versus a small real estate company or small estate agent? And the second question is, what was it like trying to sell property in London immediately following the financial crisis?
Okay, so first and foremost, when you go from a small environment to a big environment, it's less personal.
Mm.
There isn't anyone there holding your hand when you need help. So you have to just go and just immerse yourself into the environments. So there was that, which was an interesting learning experience. All of a sudden I was faced with a lot of traditional wealth that worked at KF. It was a different kind of demographic to the people that I was used to working with. So that was one thing that I had to sort of understand. And then what was it like selling real estate in 2007? Well, it was very, honestly, no one was selling any real estate for 6 months. So I used that time to sort of litmus test the market, understand it. I made some fundamental errors and people underestimated me because I looked young. I was 27, but I had 10 years worth of experience. And I loved that. Mm. The feeling of being,
I suppose the underdog in many senses.
The underdog, people just didn't expect much from me.
Mm.
And I love that. It's the best.
Yeah.
So I learned the industry. We saw a lot of people leave the company at the time. So that was hard. Every week, one person was going, another person was going. You get called into the back room. That environment was tricky, but they obviously heard that I had talent over the phone and meeting people and just my thought process. So they wanted to keep me there. So I stayed. And then after 6 months, I became the highest fee earner in the firm.
Those the move from Vickers to Knight Frank, I suppose this is when you got your first taste of super high-end resi.
Yeah.
Did you start off in super high-end resi at Knight Frank?
And see real wealth.
Yes, yeah.
Was it the first time?
Was this tactical on your part, or was it just you were put into super high-end resi?
No, it was super tactical.
Okay.
Every idea I do for a reason.
Yes.
2007's happening. We can see it's unfolding. You can hear it, feel it. You get a gauge, even though I haven't been part of anything like that before. And my thought process was, I had the choice to work. They were courting me, and I had the choice to work between £1 and £4 million or £4 and £10 million. And I thought to myself, well, wealthy people are going to come out of this faster than anyone else will. So if I go into the £4 to £10 million price range, I'm really going to challenge myself. It's an environment I don't understand. I don't know the market, but I'm going to back myself. And I went into that space, and lo and behold, the market at the top end of the market rebounded very quickly onto 6 or 7 months. And I went off doing 6, 7, 8, 10 million pound deals, which was my first super prime deal at the time, when my bosses were listening to every word that I was saying and saying, what are you doing? What are you doing? Why are you saying that? So on and so on. And I closed my deal, and that's when I knew that I had it.
You were saying there that your bosses were kind of questioning everything. And actually, one of the things when we were speaking to Gary in the last episode that he said, which I found really interesting, was that he was surrounded by hyper-successful, hyper-rich people, very early on, you know, as a kid coming around to his parents' house on Avenue Road, et cetera. Yeah. And that doesn't sound like it was the case with you.
No, so very opposite.
I want to understand how did you find, how did you kind of gain the trust of these types of people? How did you mingle in the right places? How did you speak the right language with these kind of elite in society?
I made sure they knew that I was there to service them.
Right.
I wasn't one of them. I'm there to service you. I'm Mr. Consistent. And I realized that the industry was full of sharks, and I didn't want to be a shark. So I need to maintain my integrity. And I need to make sure I tell them things that they might not like to hear, but I do it quickly, swiftly, and I do it in the right way. And because there are so many sharks, it created wide open space for me. Often when you're the black sheep, you create your own marketplace. And so I created my own marketplace. And I did some clever things where I would say to developers who would want my opinion on a property, they would say, can you give me this opinion on this house in Hamilton Terrace, whatever it may be? What do you think it's worth if I refurb it and put an extension on or whatever? And I would say, I'm sorry, I can't give you my advice. And they say, why is that? And I said, because another developer has asked me a question, and I've given them my advice, and I said that I wouldn't share it with anyone else. Now, what I was doing there was the right thing, but also I was creating my own marketplace.
Yeah, of course.
Now all the developers are going to come to me first to give me the information. The faster I get that information, the more influential I become, because I have more knowledge. And I can go and do other things, right? So I had to learn the game. Einstein said, learn the game and then play it better than everyone else. I think that's what he said. And I love that.
Yeah.
I love that.
And to set the scene here, social media is just not a thing in the space in a professional
capacity.
At the time, which just wasn't a thing.
No.
Now that's been perhaps one of the... one of those moments in your career that has kind of changed everything. So the first question I want to ask is why did you set up social media for your kind of work at that time? And the question is, number two, what did everyone else think?
Everything I do for reasons, and I have reasons for them. All right, so if I see signals, I act on those signals. If I think that they're true. And often first, and we spoke about this just before we came on, first party data is really valuable, because I know that no one in between has manipulated it. So if someone says to me, hey, I produce a piece of content and I know it gets into the hands of an ultra high net worth who comes back to me, I know that that works. That's a data point that suggests I need to continue to do that. And every business that you ever meet, the owners are building their businesses that way. They're using data and a reflection of data to go and continue to do the right thing. So it was a no-brainer for me.
And what did Knight Frank think?
Well, the industry, rather than just Knight Frank, the industry thought I was in cloud cuckoo land.
Yeah.
They thought it was an ego play.
Yeah.
You know. And they didn't quite understand it, even though I did a white paper for the business. I did a lot of work. I championed other agents to do it. And I realized very quickly that if you don't have a digital presence, it's going to be very hard for you to build a business. And all of a sudden, you become the business.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I often say to people that you're not... What's your full name? Remind me.
James Lawson Baker.
Yeah. So you're not James Lawson Baker. You're James Lawson Baker Limited. You are a business. You have the opportunity. The way I look at this is that previously, for you to run any sort of form of business, you had to work in a business. You had to work in a corporation. And that business would give you an office, and they would market, and they would pull the customer in, and then they would give it to the service provider, who would then go and do all the donkey work and then execute the transaction for a small margin. Okay. Now I have the ability to advertise. I have the ability to build relationships. I have the consideration that information is becoming more accessible, and I have the opportunities to transact on everything. Therefore, I am a full stack business, and every individual is a full stack business. And that's because, one, I have the opportunity to advertise and speak to communities, create my own communities, and two, I have so much information to hand, even more so than some big businesses, that now I have the ability to go and transact on almost anything.
You're interested. Yeah, absolutely. Did people start to follow pretty quickly or not?
Yeah, my assistant followed me immediately.
Yep.
Yeah. My mum and dad and other people, and then graduate snowballed. It takes time. Everything takes time.
Yeah.
I love the journey.
Yes, yeah.
I couldn't give a shit about the result necessarily.
Yeah.
If I get the journey right, the result will happen. And so I love the whole process to understand why and how. Should I tag? Should I not tag? Where should I be seen? What's nice? Symmetrical pictures do better.
Yes.
Like marketing. People don't realize in marketing, your first image, which we call a hero image, is very important. It's very, very important. Okay, should it be in an angle? Should it be symmetrical? Should it be front on? Should it be at night? Should it be at daytime? Should I be in the picture? How well does that perform? Like, we have all this data. Mm. And if we have the best data set, and we get out to the market, we will be more successful. It will create more opportunities for us.
Mm. Knight Frank, your period there, I think you spent about 12 years at Knight Frank.
I did, yeah.
And a number of reasons, but you were you left Knight Frank, perhaps not totally by your own decision. Were you at the time thinking about starting your own business, or were you forced to start your own business?
No, I was thinking about how the industry is changing and how we need to move into a new state, a new way of doing business, because I wanted foresight for the business. It just didn't work out.
Yeah.
So, look, in hindsight, I look back and I think that anyone who listens to this, if you're in a job and you're seeing that it should be done differently, what tends to happen is that person who sees it, okay, will cause friction amongst the people around them, because they'll get frustrated, and then the people around them will not want to spend any time with you, and there will be more friction, and then eventually either the firm steps away or you step away. And that happens in every sector across the planet. So often that's how new businesses start. And I knew that I was prepared because I was going against the grain. Which is now not the case. Now I'm very much part of the grain, if not leading it. And I was comfortable with that.
Mm. And I suppose at this stage as well, you've got so much like domain expertise in this space, that there's a level of self-assurance that comes with that.
Yes. Look, my attitude is, I know what I know, but I know very little. And what I know, I'm going to commit to. And no one else is going to help me on my journey. Nobody. I'm a council estate kid who is an only child. My parents are in their 80s, or at the time in their late 70s. Like, no one's going to look after me. And it's my job to prepare myself to be more successful. And so if I see opportunities, I have to go for them. I don't have this cushy background where mommy and daddy are going to look after me. Yeah, I look after my parents and have done for a decade, if not longer. So I have to commit to it. I'm not going to sit back and let the market take me where it wants to take me. I'm going to take control of it. That's why I don't believe in luck. I don't want to have that excuse of luck. That's an excuse. So, I was lucky last week. No, I want to be the owner of my own destiny. And when you come from the background that I have, which is just like an insane amount of love, I had the most amazing upbringing. I would do it all again. You know, I was even the worst parts of my upbringing, being mugged at knife point at 8 years old and all this sort of stuff, or 10, it's made me. So when I see opportunity, I'm going to go for it, even if other people don't think it's right.
because I'm just going to have a smaller version of what those people have got. And that's not good enough for me.
So, Daniel, we're now at the start of DDRE. Mm-hmm. We're now in those early days. And I imagine, like any business, it's, you know, you've come from a small estate agent to a large property business to starting your own business. And with working for other people, you have the support structures around you, have operations, you have finance, you have legal, etc. And this is not now just selling property, this is running a business. Very, very different disciplines, I imagine. So in those early days of DDRE, was there an enormous adjustment period? Did you feel
like just running a business? Like, what we have done as a business is ginormous. If you sit back and actually look what we've done, we've just challenged the two most significant real estate businesses on the planet, arguably the most powerful. We've just challenged them in their own marketplace. We did it with no external funds from our kitchen table during COVID with skill and recognizing where value sits where other people don't see it. What we've done is immense. What Sarah has done, who's the CEO of the business, Maddie, Claudia, all the people that came into the business super early during really irrational times, truly irrational times. What we've done is immense. We are now we're like the fourth most, we bounce between fourth and fifth and sixth, actually, most influential real estate business in the UK at marketing, selling homes over £5 million. The closest competitor to us that sort of came into the market is someone who came in with $40 million and deployed that into the marketplace. And now they're up there and above us because they've deployed all that capital.
Yeah.
We did it with talent and skill.
Yeah.
And what we've done is immense.
I suppose this is now a few years down. In those early days,
yeah.
What didn't work out?
Everything didn't work.
Yeah.
It took us 3 months to get a bank account. Nothing worked. The only thing that worked was clients came to me and said, Daniel, I need your help. I trust you to, you understand what you're doing. I trust you to do what you need to do for me. And so we made, I think it was like £600,000 in 3 months. We were profitable from day one, purely because I have what I call trust equity with my client base.
Yes.
It's where I've been so consistent with them by giving good advice that when shit hits the fan for them, they pick up the phone
or the guy,
or they send me a WhatsApp or a DM or whatever it may be, and they know that I'll look after them. That's my job.
Talk to me about your also on a no-name space. Talk to me about your clients. Who are they? Where do they come from? Where have they had their success? How did you get to know them? You know, what do you talk to me about?
Most of our clients are entrepreneurs. It's like a feeling that they get. They love the entrepreneurial attitude. So you know what it's like. You're an entrepreneur. People just come together. You'll see each other at different events and it'll be familiar faces and everyone's helping one another. You don't really know that until you become part of that environment. When you stay in the corporate world, what happens is the corporate world does really good to blinker you. When you step out of that environment, getting into these sort of entrepreneurial ways of doing things, you meet like-minded people, which is great. So loads of entrepreneurs from all over the world. I mean, Bitcoin, technology in particular, loads of clients in technology, media, content, actors, actresses, footballers, sports people, personalities, like all of that is a place when you're creating content and can speak publicly to the market, you attract those kinds of people. Do we deal with CEOs of big businesses? Yes. Can I talk about it? No. 80% of what I do, I can't talk about, and I wouldn't talk about it,
of course.
But our industry's changed drastically.
And do you become friends with these clients, or is it strictly business, or does it depend?
I'm arm's length.
Yeah.
I never want to be the person that goes out and wines and dines people.
Yes.
Yeah. Whether you like the terminology or not, I'm essentially a gun for hire. Like if you want an expert to help you execute something, I'm that guy. And that's who I want to be. I want to spend my time now with my family. I want to spend my time now with just people who are really close to me. There's not a huge amount of them, but a client needs to know that I'm an expert.
Mm.
I don't need to wine and dine you to offer you a service which is weaker than a service that he or she may offer. I want to be an expert in my field and you will come to me, not in an egotistical way, in a safe way,
yeah,
that you know you're going to be looked after.
You obviously you show your clients and you sell.
Sorry, I also didn't grow up in that environment.
Yes, yeah.
I didn't grow up in the environment of going to Jimmy's or Saint-Consanc in the south of France, being friends with everybody and everyone's whining and dining one another and all that sort of stuff. I never had that.
Yeah.
I feel uncomfortable there. It's not my natural habitat.
Yes.
I can be there. I can look the part. I can act the part, see the part. I can, you know, everyone goes, oh, that's that guy, so on and so on. Fine. It's not my space of comfort.
And you don't aspire. I don't care enough. Yes. Yeah.
I just don't care enough.
It's really interesting. I mean, it sounds to me that you absolutely adore what you do, and that really comes across. It's not necessarily, as you were saying earlier about the journey, it's not necessarily the spoils that come with success and what you do. It's actually what you do.
I was walking with a kid who's doing a day intern with one of the ladies that works with us, and he said, I would love to spend 20 minutes with you. I said, come on, let's walk now to this interview. So I said to him, pride lacks.
Pride
lacks. There's not enough of pride in our industry.
Yes.
Also in British culture. In British culture, it was like, if you could be successful and lazy at the same time, i.e. not show that you're working hard, that's seen as gold star. Okay? I'm opposite. I'm totally opposite. I work really hard to be an expert at what I do. Really hard. Because I want to be brilliant. I've got so much pride. My mum, it's from how clean she kept the house. Okay, and how she said to me, when I walk down the street, walk upright, don't drag your feet. Pride was driven into me as a young man, okay? Irrelevant of our surroundings. I would have so much pride in what I do that you can't fault it.
Mm.
You can try to, but he's committed. And that's what I love. I don't care about the result. The result is whether or not we're successful or not. And what success looks like to me isn't necessarily having a Bugatti Veyron. It might be to some of my clients and they can enjoy it and that's great. One of my clients has got so many cars, he's on a car spending spree. I love my client, he's a friend of mine, it's great. But I don't get off on stuff like that.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what I really get off on, what I really love is when people go, Daniel, do what you think's right. When I have your trust and it's not even questioned, that's when I get nachas. Like a good feeling inside, that's when I get it. And I love that.
Mm.
I cherish it. It's the best feeling. When someone goes, hey, James, do what you think is right. How good does that feel? It feels much better than, and it sounds corny, much better than a Lamborghini or a 20,000 square foot house.
I do want to move on to the houses.
Mm-hmm. Albeit 20,000 square foot houses are wonderful.
It's pretty nice, right? Yeah, you obviously show and sell some of the finest properties in the UK and across the world. I want to ask you two questions. So the first one is that, is there a property that you've walked into that I say, Daniel, think in your DDRE story, think of that one property that just sits with you for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm.
What is that property?
There's a house that we sold to someone very famous. Probably about 10 years ago on Blomfield Road, which is in Little Venice where I live now.
Yes.
And it has a 200 foot garden. It's got off-street parking for two cars. It was 4,600 square feet. You could dig a little bit of a basement if you wanted more space. It was a period house. And then it had a little gate at the end of the garden that gives you access to 2.5 acres of communal gardens. And it at the front looks over the canal. And that is just the bee's knees.
Mm.
It was beautiful, and I loved it. And one day, if I'm successful enough, not wealthy, if I'm successful enough, that would be a home I'd like to own.
Is super prime just about price tag and square footage, or is it, you just spoke about that little gate, and I feel like you stressed the word little gate there. There was something about everything in that. Is super prime just square footage and price, or is it more than that?
No, super prime is just. Is the tag that you stick on it, but it's everything else.
Mm-hmm.
It's the condition, the design, the space, the direction, the volume, the lighting design, the textures. I mean, there's so much involved, which equate to a price that you desire. The reason why I nicknamed myself Mr. Super Prime was just because for analytical data and research.
Yeah. And then with properties like that you just described, do these properties sell themselves, or do great estate agents sell the property?
Or is it, no, great estate agents create more value.
Right.
You create more value. It's either speed, efficiency, or value. The property should sell themselves if you get it right.
Yes.
But sometimes you have to be a little bit more creative.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
People have got so much wrong about the estate agency industry, the real estate industry. It's totally defunct. It's not working.
So before I get on to buying London, which I've wanted to get on for a little bit, one of the things that really came across was you've got a team of real characters. A bunch of really interesting people that have come along on this journey with you. So I want to try and understand how you've approached, especially in the early days, how you approached who you bring with you. What was it that you were looking for? Who did you want as part of your dream team?
That's a great question. There are different reasons for different outcomes. First and foremost, we live in a multicultural society and our clients are more multicultural than others. And therefore, wealth sits outside of the UK and how you can get messages to people outside of the UK and in the UK is very important. But most people won't necessarily resonate with me. Let's say a lot of people don't resonate with me. They may resonate with Remy or with Rasa or with Lauren or with Ollie. And if you look at all of us, it's a little bit like an orchestra. To make great tunes, you need a great orchestra and they all need to play a different instrument. But they're all delivering the same message. I'm just the conductor.
Mm.
And that is a value-add proposal that our clients have with us, that we can deliver the right message to the right people from the person that they are hoping to receive the message from. Whereas in most industry or most companies here, everyone looks the same, sounds the same, and acts the same. And people don't want that. People want a bespoke way of doing business that is bespoke for them. So they feel special, and I get that.
But specifically, what are those things when you're assembling this dream, this orchestra? What are those specific things you're looking for? Are they character traits?
No,
is it something that feels?
It's all about the art of communication.
Right.
If you can communicate well digitally or in person, then you will be more successful than your peers. So we want people who can communicate well, that have that way of tickling your heartstrings. Or can speak to a lot of people in one go. You see, advertising's over social channels and remaining consistent is extremely valuable. So the fact that we can produce content and deliver content through people's social channels is very valuable. And therefore, Rasa, who has about, 100,000 people that follow over social channels delivering a message around our business is very valuable. But we need to create the right environment for her and we need to give her the opportunity to be successful. She carries a lot of value, Rasa. Okay. Now she might not be the biggest deal doer in our business. That's probably me or, a couple of other people, but she carries her own value and her value gets compounded on other people.
Yes. Yeah.
In our business. So what we wanted to do is build a business of different kinds of people that have different attributes. And then if you get the right corporate structure, what happens is everyone's value compounds everyone else's value and we create a moat around our business. So to try and duplicate what DDRE can do now is very difficult for every other business that would try and go down the brokerage model because they don't have compounding factors that we have inbuilt. And that's through our CRM.
It's like your IP, isn't it?
Our IP is how our business is built and our CRM and the ability of working collaboratively. Okay, we really champion it. And my view on this is that you can be the best real estate agent in the world, but there will be times where you might not be able to work or times may be tough for you. I'd rather you had an opportunity to make 50% of the fee whilst collaborating with someone else in our business. So you always have a bit of positivity at the end of your week. There's always something for you to do. So if you ask the people in our business, everyone's hungry and everyone's working collaboratively.
Mm.
So communication, making sure that they are good people, good humans, want to work with integrity, but work together, as a goal, because our business is much more than just selling real estate. Our business is about leading the industry and everyone has to be in it. So we don't go out and ask people to be part of the business. They come to us and then we know it's culturally a good fit.
Yeah, good position to be in.
Yeah.
I want to speak about buying London. So I've really been looking forward to this section. I want to read you a review, a quote to kick us off. And this is a quote from The Guardian. So you can probably know exactly what I'm talking about.
Boy, yeah.
And they described Bynund as the most hateable TV show ever made. Now, I doubt that this was their intention, but if this review doesn't make you want to watch it, there's nothing that will. So the first question I have is how on earth did it come about? And the second question is, why did you do it?
It came about because I've been asked to do a lot of TV because I've been producing so much content and I'm relatively comfortable now in front of camera. Also, there are very few people that are comfortable in front of camera that also have the keys to people's homes where they trust them. And so our clients are happy for me to do that, but you have to put yourself in that space to figure that out first. And so they approached us and we went for it.
Yeah.
Why did we do it? We wanted to build brand quickly. I wanted to get people at DDRE seen all over the world going into very expensive homes.
Yes.
That was it.
Yeah.
That was the purpose. And I wanted us to be a recognized brand, and we are. Whether we choose to like somebody in the show is irrelevant because we've got another 40 people that you could pick from.
Yeah.
But we're winning business because Rasa sung in Hindu. Who would have thought? Well, maybe we did. And building brand is done through digital channels, and Netflix is a great distributor of brand.
I thought you'd give me that answer, and I kind of agree with you there. I mean, what better way to get mass exposure very, very quickly, especially if it's polarizing, right? Especially if it's polarizing.
But is it polarizing?
Well, it's polarizing in the it's a kind of a blend of you know, super wealthy, big characters, a kind of a fun, entertaining storyline.
Great.
A look under the hood. Like, it is.
Great.
Yeah.
Is it polarizing?
I think it was. Maybe polarizing is the wrong word. It was. I thought it was very baity. But in a really fun and entertaining way.
Right.
Was it meant to be anything more than fun and entertaining?
Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
What do you think about the real estate industry here in the UK? Do you think it's fun and entertaining? Do you think it's sexy and cool
for
young people to get into the industry?
Oh, do I think it's... No, do I think it's sexy and cool? Do I think commercial is sexy and cool? Probably not. Do I think high-end resi is sexy and cool? Yeah, I think it's quite interesting.
Do you think it was 10 years ago?
No, probably not.
Okay,
I think
it was 5 years ago?
Perhaps no one saw it 10 years ago.
Dang. Do you think it was 5 years ago?
Yeah, I think it probably it's starting to get more interesting. Yeah.
Well, why do you think that was?
Social media.
Right. And who do you think pioneered that?
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right.
It's really simple. Like, I'm not playing the small game here, right? We are playing a very, very big game. I'm okay. I'll be all right. You can drop me anywhere in London or around the world and I'll survive. I'll be okay.
Mm.
But I want people to have the best footing in life.
Yes.
Okay. To be inspired to be great, to be inspired to be successful. Yeah, irrelevant of your background. I genuinely want that. And in the world that is changing so rapidly, and I have a slightly dystopian view around how the world could work, I want young people to understand that they have opportunity. And 10 years ago, if you'd asked somebody, do you want to be a real estate agent? They would have scoffed at you and said, no way. Do you think I've been proud telling people I'm a real estate agent, even when I worked at a big firm like Knight Frank? No. There was no pride. There's no pride in our industry. Oh, you're proud to be a real estate agent? Oh, no, I'm going to look down upon that person. That's the perception here in the UK. Well, now it isn't. Now it's cool and sexy. And there are people around the UK that want to be real estate agents because they see that you can be in amazing environments. You can see beautiful things. You can be inspired every single day, not just by the real estate, but by the people that you meet. I'm inspired by the people I meet, not the real estate. Our industry is incredible, yet we haven't inspired anyone to be part of it. It's been a closed shop at the top end of the market. Do you see many people like me at the top end of the market?
No.
You've interviewed other people in the top end of the market. I would say that we're very different people.
Yes.
Drastically different.
Mm.
I'm a normal guy. So I can inspire normal people to go and be more successful in what was a closed shop. Isn't that amazing? Isn't that incredible?
Has it made DDRE a better business?
Meaning what, sorry?
Has the show made...
We've made more money.
Yes.
We've met more people.
Yeah.
Our brand is easier. We've got 300 people who have applied, over 300 people that applied for jobs for DDRE.
Yes.
Meanwhile, we only have 40 people.
Yes.
Like, we're being very selective. We want the right people. Has it helped us? Absolutely, it has. Has it hindered us? Yes, possibly. But anything you do has risk and reward.
Of course.
It's just that making sure that the reward is far greater than the risk, which it was. And my consideration over it was, out of 100 people, I probably know 15 that might want to buy or sell real estate at the top end of the market. Okay, so there's 85 other people. Okay, out of the 85 other people, am I going to get to know them? Maybe, maybe not. Okay, so if I do a TV show, will I get to know them? Yes. Yeah. Out of the 85, how many of them will hate me? 50. Okay, so they hate me because 50 hate me. But 35 more love me,
yeah,
or like me. And that's great. And our world has been just this normal, lethargic attitude of real estate. Let's not do anything more. Let's not incorporate data. Let's not incorporate social channels. Let's not run any campaign marketing and give more awareness, or run first-party data over our content so we can be niche and find the buyer faster and all that sort of stuff. Like, we're miles ahead.
Would you have expected the amount of traction that the show got?
Sure.
You did?
Yeah.
And were you prepared for the
we're the only people that people know around the world,
yes,
in luxury real estate in the UK. Like, people, not companies, people.
Yes. Yeah.
And we're a people business. So we want that. We want that. I work for an amazing business. It is an amazing business, Knight Frank. But we would travel the world and people would say Frank Knight. So I want people to know who Daniel Daggers is and who Remy is and who Rasser is and who all the people are in our business. They are essentially personal brands that deliver a service and we help incubate them to make them greater. That's what we want to do.
How do you keep people if you're helping raise their personal brands and not that necessarily of the company, or the company is the secondary thing you're raising? How do you keep people rather than...
We need to make sure that we offer more value.
Yes.
And we do.
Yeah.
And I'm amazed. Well, I think you're going to see a day of reckoning in our industry. I think we're going to turn into a brokerage world like the rest of the world, where people run their own businesses. And if they do that, then we're in a great place where people start to see real value from us. I think the day of a corporate brand not offering any value to people is dissipating rapidly.
Mm.
Rapidly.
Were there any unexpected positive or negative consequences of the show?
Yeah, negative was that people were trying to find negative stories about me and they couldn't. They were all digging.
Yeah.
I'm very pleased with the way my parents raised me because I've been a good boy.
Yes.
The good things, I've met some of the most successful people on the planet through DM on social media from it. Like, you cannot imagine.
Yeah.
I'll show you afterwards. Yeah. That have put me into places and spoken to me about things that I never thought I'd ever have the chance to think about. And I just love that. I just love that so much.
Mm.
It's been, I don't really go around with any form of expectation. I never have any expectations of people. I do get disappointed every now and again, like everyone does, but I have feelings around things and I have visions of where I think this is all going to go. And the patterns seem to be pretty aligned. So meeting people through DM who are the most successful people in technology, the most.
It validates what the whole point, right?
Yeah, we're doing everything for a reason.
Yeah.
Everything, it's playful, it's true, but everything's done for a reason.
You have pushed the boat out and put yourself out there. And I feel like you've have pretty broad shoulders to deal with any unexpected consequences of these things. But you put yourself out there online. And I suppose as you build a bigger business, a bigger brand, the risks of doing these things becomes greater and greater for the thing that doesn't pay off.
Yeah.
And those risks aren't the same for a 22-year-old young Danny Daggers,
right?
How do you stay ahead of those 22-year-old wannabe Danny Daggers that are doing anything they need to do digitally to try and get ahead that you perhaps can't do anymore?
It's the best question I've heard in a long time because it's something that I'm trying to figure out. Whilst I may appear to have the answer to a lot of things, yeah, there's this consistent thought around how do you continue to push the boat out, do things that are uncomfortable,
And I'm doing that every day. Building a business is uncomfortable for me because I don't think I'm a natural at it, but we're doing relatively well, so I must be getting something right. I think the most undervalued skill or characteristic in our world is bravery. And I am very brave. I think when I was younger, people thought I was stupid or egotistical. Now probably people start to think about bravery as a characteristic that I hold dear and hold well. I need to recognize what scares me a little bit and then attack it.
Mm.
So that may be a podcast in the future. That may be opening another business. Maybe relinquishing some influence and power in my business. Whatever it may be, the best thing about social media channels is that you can learn from people. And my For You page and all that sort of stuff is me learning from people.
Mm.
And it's enabled me to think more broadly about stuff whilst retaining elements of bravery.
Mm. So just on that last point, you just mentioned relinquishing control. Mm. And there's a question that's kind of prompted me to ask, which was, you've obviously got a huge work ethic and you've got a massive hunger to build something really special here. But how do you build DDRE into a legacy business that Daniel Daggers doesn't need to be the kind of the literal kind of driver behind the business? How'd you do that? When you get older, et cetera, how'd you build DDR into a legacy business?
What does DDRE stand for?
Question?
Yeah.
Daniel Daggers Real Estate.
No, it doesn't. What does it stand for?
Ah.
DDRE could mean loads of different things, couldn't it? Like double down, or deal a day, or data driven. It can mean
it's the master plan.
It can mean yes. I paved this journey. You can see that I'm a deep thinker.
Yeah.
I paved this journey 8 years ago, 9 years ago, 10 years ago. Okay. DDRE isn't me. DDRE is me saying, what do real estate agents need to be phenomenally successful in the future? And then giving it to them. Okay? That's what it's about. DDRE is only Daniel Daggers Real Estate if you do your due diligence. But if you're just a man walking down the street, it doesn't mean Daniel Daggers Real Estate. What does CBRE stand for?
No idea.
What does JLL stand for?
I should know this because I've got a friend that works JLL, but I don't
know. Right. It's James Lang LaSalle.
Yeah.
But we think that we are so important and our names are so important when the truth is that most people don't really care. You see, people will care about the people in our business, but they won't care about DDRE. I need to make sure that the people in our business care about DDRE. So we're doing things to make sure that that continues.
So with that said, I mean, is DDRE then, are your aspirations for DDRE to become a legacy business, to be the ultimate platform for estate agents to grow their own almost mini businesses?
Yes.
Within a platform, within a bigger business?
Yeah. So I'll give you an indication of how I look at this. I've traveled the world meeting the best real estate agents on the planet, whether they're brokers or real estate agencies. The difference between a brokerage and a real estate agency is the brokerage are independent people working under an umbrella. Okay, they're all independent and they work independently. The estate agency, everyone works under the umbrella and they all form part of the same CRM and they share the same information, right? But they don't make much money and these people make loads of money or they don't make anything and these people make an average sum of money and they find it hard to really build a life and a legacy. We have the ability to do the two, okay? And combine the best features of a estate agency with the best features of brokerage. The brokerage, people love the independence and the ability that tomorrow may be the best day of your life and you may make enough money to have financial freedom for the next 5 years. And you can afford to have a wedding in Tuscany, okay? These people don't have that ability. They often have to be at their desk at X time of day or whatever it may be, and they have a boss peering over them, telling them what to do and how to go and so on and so on, loads of glass ceilings, and they probably don't have the abilities to have a wedding in Tuscany. And they travel to work 1.5 hours every morning and evening. to and from work. The difference between these two is the sharing of information, the corporate brand, and the ability to execute. If we create an environment where information is shared but secured, and we give them content so they can advertise every single day, we now have the benefit of both worlds. If we create a world where we have the benefits of these two industries that work unbelievably well for those people, then we have compounding value for the people that work in our business. And that's what we're doing.
I'm going to ask you a couple of reflective questions and answer them however you like. So if you were to create a fantasy property for yourself, no limits, what would be the things you have to have in that property?
Good space, volume, low amount of floors, outside space, great amount of light, so facing in the right direction depending on your hemisphere, and good views. Everything else you can play with. They're all the fundamentals.
Country or city?
City.
UK or abroad?
UK.
Do you feel like you've made it?
No.
Do you think you'll ever feel like you've made it?
No.
It's almost the point.
What's the point?
That is almost the point. It's almost the point.
I have this insatiable attitude of like, I can do more. I can do more, I can do more, I can do more. Am I content? Yes. I'm super content. We have a beautiful little home and our little family, and I love it like tremendously. I can't tell you how happy I am. My heart is so full at the moment, right? Because of my little family. Love it. But I'm hungry as hell to do amazing things in my life. I don't know where it's come from. My parents, 100% in my first probably 10 years, planted the seed and watered it. But I am so hungry to be the best version of myself that nothing is going to stand in my way. Nothing. I love it. And I don't like succeeding. I just love the comeback. I just love the comeback. The comeback is so much better. Look at every movie. Look at every movie that is a phenomenal movie. It's all about the comeback. And I love being questioned and queried and pointed at and questioned. I love it. There's nothing more satisfying than the comeback. And it's just part of my DNA. So am I successful to other people outside the industry? Yes. I mean, like, I have young people coming up to me and asking me for pictures and asking me for advice, and I love it. It's one way that I can share love with other people is by helping them. But that's the environment I already feel like I've conquered. Like, I don't need to prove to anybody that I'm good at what I do. I just need to prove to the people that have run businesses that have been phenomenally successful that I can do that too.
Yeah.
And then after I've done that, there'll be something else, whether it be charity or football or whatever it may be. Just love a challenge. Life without challenge is a sad life.
I started this podcast telling you that Gary Hersham, when asked who he'd want on his dream team that he didn't already have, he said you. So I'm gonna pose exactly the same question to you as the final question. Is if you could have someone that works alongside you that you haven't worked with, that you haven't been able to have on your team, who would that person be and why?
Dead or alive?
Dead or alive.
I did work with a woman called Eliza Lee, who was this tall, and she was just an amazing force to be reckoned with. Smart, intelligent, sharp, engaging, powerful, but soft. You knew that if you needed something, she'd get it done. She would do anything and she would get it done. And her commitment to the cause in the moments that I spent time with her was immense. She had some weaknesses, yeah, but she was unbelievable. And I have someone already in my team who's a bit like that. But yeah, those people where you say, I need your help, or can you do something? Those people that can execute that are gold dust. Absolute gold dust. And it's very rare to find those people. Very rare. I think I'm one of those people.
That, I was just about to say that that was what you were describing earlier. That's the person you wanted to be for your clients.
Yeah.
exactly the same thing.
So when my clients talk to me and they say, oh, but the fee here and the fee there, I'm like, you're just not seeing it. And therefore, maybe I'm not for you. And that's okay. That's fine. She was brilliant. Like, I have some people that are growing into that space, that phase where you have that level of maturity and that knowledge and know-how and wisdom, you know, that just are just so considered and just absolutely accurate, like a sniper. They're brilliant. Gary's incredible at what he does. There are a handful. I tell you something a bit sad, actually. And I thought about this, is people don't realize how stressful the estate agency world is. The amount of stress that you carry for your clients. The most successful real estate agents I've met have died early. They've died young.
And you think as a direct direct kind of result of stress?
Yeah. I think there's a correlation. I think there's a correlation from inside the industry, but also clients. Yeah. I also think it impacts people's ability to have relationships, our industry, because you're so used to building great rapport with people and then you do the piece of business and they go.
It's done.
Right. And so I think I got into that phase when trying to find a partner, you know, so big psychological impact. Eliza passed away too young. She was amazing.
Well, the fact that she stays with you is it, you know, in that question, who would you want on your team is powerful. So Daniel, I just want to thank you very much for doing this. It's an absolute pleasure. Thoroughly enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thanks, Daniel.
Thank you, Daniel.